anybody's had anxiety attacks, you know exactly what they're like. They're awful to deal with. So mental health, physical health go hand in hand. If you cannot get out of bed in the morning, then you cannot do any physical workout. So you've got to understand that all these things go hand in hand. And once my GP had sat down with me and spoke to me and kind of guided me through really that transition and got me to believe that I still have something to contribute to the world, then I became all right. But I remember when I came out and that said generally publicly, all my sponsors and supporters were straight on me, going to me, you know we got your back, right? You know you don't have to worry about this. You know this, you know. And I was like, well, yeah, I presume that because you're decent people. So I didn't think you'd be running to the hills, you know?
Hello and welcome to the Experts in Health podcast brought to you by Loughborough University. This podcast aims to highlight the latest research and trends in health as we welcome a variety of guests from a host of different disciplines. I'm Dr. Chris McLeod, an academic in the School of Sports, Exercise and Health Sciences with an expertise in behavioural nutrition and public health. And today, I'm delighted to be joined by Colin Jackson, CBE. Now, Colin is a retired Welsh athlete who specialised in 110-metre hurdles, and he is widely regarded as one of the greatest hurdlers in the history of athletics, having won too many world and international titles to name in the time that we have, and also held the 110-metre sprint world record for over 10 years, and maybe a little bit less known, but also the 60-metre hurdles world record for nearly 27 years. Colin, it's wonderful to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you very much for inviting me to be part of it.
Not at all. Now, this is one of the many fascinating things about you, that you know, if you get to know you, and then you pair that experience with a knowledge of your date of birth, you come away, well, I do it anyway, and going, what is his elixir? How is he able to be pretty much the same in energy and everything since like the 80s? So, you know, do you get that a lot from people saying that sort of thing?
Do you know what? I do. And I think it's because I am very childlike in everything that I do. I think I spent most of my time playing all my life. And if you play at things, have a good time at doing things, then I don't think you run into many troubles. Adding to that, my mother would say I've got her genetics and hence that's the reason why. So I want to claim one thing, mother claims something else.
Sounds good. You've got the genes and you've got the lifestyle coming together. Now, hopefully we can delve into this a little bit and just get your experience, you know, on the subject of health. But people can read a Wikipedia page about you and sort of say, you know, how we can actually explain who Colin Jackson is and who he's been. But how would you sum up who Colin Jackson is right now? How would you describe yourself?
You know, that's always an interesting question because it's one of the most difficult things when people ask you what you do once you've retired from the world of professional sport. Because once you have, you know, during your career as a sports injury, you write sportsman, right? So that's it, clear. It's well defined there. But now I feel that I'm a little bit of a sense of, I don't know, I kind of champion all sorts of things. Champion things that are close to me, really, that's relevant to me, that's relevant to my lifestyle. And also things that I generally believe in. So I'd always describe myself as potentially just like as a human champion, you know. But it's really difficult to put that on a career's definition. But if you ask me, that's right, Cyrus.
Yeah, sounds great. Well, it means that you probably get up each day with a bit of a passion, a joie de vivre to go and do what you do. If you were to sort of whet people's appetite to say, you know, why what we're going to talk about today is everything health and well-being, your experience of that, why that is so important to you, why should it be important to other people?
I think you started that a question exactly the way that I do wake up every single day. I bounce out of bed. I've always got something to do. There's always something positive on my mind. And I think you create an environment for health and fitness and lifestyle to grow in harmony. And I think I've been really lucky that I've been able to do that, obviously, from the world of professional sport. But then once you've retired from there, you've got to get into some kind of groove. which is, again, right, and I always say realistic for your current lifestyle, because it was realistic for you to get up and hit the gym or go on the track for 3-4 hours a day when you're professional. But when you've got other things in the world to do, then it's not realistically able for you to do something like that. So you've got to build in into your own current lifestyle what you want to do as a routine. And I would always say, look after yourself, you know. So you, once again, nothing is or can be separated. So mental health, physical health go hand in hand. If you cannot get out of bed in the morning, then you cannot do any physical workout. So you've got to understand that all these things go hand in hand. So I always feel, because I've got things to do that are good, that are fun, that I'm interested in, it allows me to just get out of bed with energy and start to prepare myself for the rest of the day and whatever challenges in front of me.
So if I just take you back to your, you know, professional athletic career stage, did you have that mindset at the time when you were competing? Did you have a holistic health sort of concept every day? Or was it the outcome, the times, how I'm performing, how I'm feeling, that's the main goal, and everything's feeding into that outcome rather than the outcome of overall health? Or did you have that more holistic thought?
No. To be honest, I was solely just focused on the job in hand. You're very, very laser-visioned for performance. And there's a marked difference in performance health and fitness to there is as a general lifestyle health and fitness. Of course, there's things that kind of, you know, flow over, but there's specifically a very marked difference in my mind, because, you know, what I want to get out of my body as a professional sportsman was I'm going to say this, it was just insane, right? I mean, when you think about the training you're doing, that you're beating up your actual body to try and get the ultimate performance, when you think about it, that's just literally crazy, because you're pushing yourself and pushing your body to limits, actually, it shouldn't taste. And so for you, for me, it was always focused vision. You never thought about what the consequences of you working your hips to death, your lower back to death, your knees to death, your ankles to death when you're in your early 20s. Because, of course, your body is so resilient that it just cracks on. Whilst when you get a little bit older, 30s, 40s, 50s, you definitely got to look at the way you prepare your body for the next stage. So you've got to be healthy, you've still got to be fit, but you've got to prepare your body very well, not to be so destructive.
And I mean, when you were in your 20s and even before that, you were running, you ran the fastest time that anyone had ever run and had recorded for the 110 meter hurdles. And for 10 years, you were the fastest person ever in that event. How did that feel at that point when you had that record for so long?
My sister always makes me giggle because she always says, you're the fastest of the 20th century and there, that's it. That's all you need to know. And I just used to giggle when she used to say that. You set yourself a goal, you get a dream. And, you know, I never generally believed that I could be that person. You know, what, there's nearly 8 billion people on the planet. Why should it be this young man from Llanedin in Cardiff, grew up in a housing estate there and lots of friends who were, you know, slightly distracted is the word I'd use. Why was it going to be me that becomes the ultimate performer in that sense? But then you flip that to the other side once you start to get into training and prayer and then say, well, why can't it be me? It's got to be somebody, so why shouldn't it be me? And so when that mindset itself changes, then your approach to performance changes. And then once you absolutely nail the nail the performance, really, you can generally pat yourself on the back. I mean, numerous occasions you say to my coach, am I actually that good? And he just say, what's your PB? And I go, oh yeah, it's okay. It's a good PB. Yeah.
It's a good reminder that if you're feeling a bit of a down day, just to look at the papers and go, oh yeah, no, that was me.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's all right, yeah. You mentioned earlier about, you know, genes play a role. If we leave that aside and think about more the lifestyle behaviours that you engaged in when you were in your professional career, you know, your physical fitness in the gym, on the track, your nutrition, your sleep. Can you give us an idea of the sort of stuff that you were doing to get into that peak physical shape?
Yeah, I mean, physically, the work was grueling. let's put it this way, I was a 110-meter hurdler, but most probably trained like 800-meter runner. So, and then thrown into the mix, I had the technical work that I had to do. But I realized I'm only short. I mean, if people don't know me or see me, I'm only like 5'10" and a bit, right? So I'm relatively short for a high hurdle. And so I had to be mega elastic. So there was lots of plyometric work that would do to make me explosive as well. I had to work a lot on my physical mobility in every angle. So that way, you know, this way, that way, every way you can imagine. I was hypermobile in that sense. And coupled to that, I had to marry a very good weight training regime, which would allow me to be very strong in all these ultimate positions. So that was one element of preparation. And then you have to be as fast as a sprinter, really. So I'd have to, you know, really look at my power output, really work on my sprinting capabilities, you know, focus on a couple of sprint races. You know, in the end, I kind of won the European indoor title, of course, as a sprinter, not just as a high hurdler. So, you know, that had to come together to get the ultimate performance. And then you link that in diet. Now, this is where things kind of fell apart slightly for me, because I was so obsessed about performance. I put a simple equation together, you know, the lighter the weight, you know, and the stronger you are, the power output ratio can be extended, obviously. And so for me, I got a little bit lost on the eating stuff, and that kind of created hell for me for a bit. Because I was spending time being a bulimic, etc., etc. And that is not what you want to do when you're a professional athlete. You want to have the best nutrition possible for you to really marry good training with good recovery. And we all know what that can create when you're not eating well, for sleep and for rest. You know, all these things get linked in when you're not doing things 100% right. So my mind was really on one side of it, and I didn't really think too much of the other side of it. And you get away with it for some time, but it is so, so, so destructive. You've got to really realize, and I always, when I talk about it now, I tell people how destructive that can be when you're trying to get the ultimate out of your body, because you've got to fuel it.
Yeah, I can imagine. And another thing that can be very destructive if you don't get it quite right is the mental health preparedness. You know, especially when you have so much pressure, setbacks, injuries, all the demands that you have. How did you find the mental health side of things? And did you do anything to sort of help yourself in that regard?
Well, I was really lucky that I could talk to people. You know, I mean, you know me well enough, but I'm easy to chat. So, and I'm not afraid to chat. So I think I was really lucky that I had people I could talk to and who were willing to listen to me. And so when I was I needed to open up with anything, it was quite easy for me to do that with people that I trusted and who had, well, I kind of want to use the word, like a love for you that was like a family love. They just wanted to nurture your spirit. And when you find that, you know, those people, it wasn't just individual people, when you find those people, it certainly can make you grow with confidence and abilities. And it takes away that burden of being on your own. So I think for me, I was really lucky that I found people like that. And they're there for everybody. But sometimes you as an individual have got to be able to open up. Choose them right, but open up to those real individual people, because they will help you on your particular journey. So I think I was very fortunate there when it comes to mental health. I had these people around.
And looking back now and what you've learned up to now, is there any advice that you would give to people, athlete or not, for helping manage their mental health, you know, further to finding someone to talk to, either as a preventative or as a treatment measure? Is there anything else that you've come to look to?
I think right now there are so many great resources out there. I mean, what we're talking about now is just going to be part of the resources for athletes to really tap in on. And to look at themselves and believe in themselves and understand, you know, take it really back and understand why you're actually doing something. So, you know, you're there to achieve personal gratification. Doesn't matter what anybody else says, it's about you as the individual. And so you've got to take that on board and go, do you know what? What I'm going to do is up to me. I'm going to make that magic happen. And I want you to help me on that journey. Now, if you want to help me on that journey, come with. If you don't, step aside. And it's being brave enough to really look at yourself and look at you, the people that are around you, your peers. Who is going to be genuinely on this particular journey with you? And if you can nail that right, that's what you should do. So I think, you know, when you say to advice or in that sense, generally just think about being selfish. Think about yourself and what you want to achieve.
And you can take the bull by the horns, and as you're sort of saying about with that, you know, you've got to try and look after the number one with your mental health. You're the one that's in your head and knows how that's feeling. But there are things that happen in life that are not as much under your control. And for you, you know, as with everyone, the aging process happens. And at some point, an athletic career becomes a post-athletic professional career because, yeah, age happens. How did you navigate that transition? Because that has been shown to be a difficult time for many athletes in regard to their mental health. So how did you navigate it?
I was like everybody else. I was no special case in that sense. I struggled when I was about to retire. But I was very fortunate that I had a great GP. And I spent a lot of time with my GP talking to me all the time and making sure I understood my anxieties, because I was suffering a lot from anxiety attacks. And if anybody's had anxiety attacks, you know exactly what they're like. They're awful to deal with. And I was having these genuine anxiety attacks. And once my GP had sat down with me and spoke to me and kind of guided me through really that transition and got me to believe that I still have something to contribute to the world, then I became all right. But it took a bit of time because, you know, I retired at 36 and I thought about my life up until that particular stage. And, you know, you had 36 to 36, you're not too old, just 72 in that sense, and you still feel you've got plenty of living. But what am I going to do to fill this 36 years? Because it just seems so much was packed in the first, from school to a sporting career that was, you know, well decorated. So how am I going to achieve the same or the equivalent in the next 36 years? It just seems impossible. So anxiety was a real issue for me in that sense. But like I said, I was so lucky that I had a GP that helped guide me through that. And I ended up being where I am today. A bit more confident than I was when I retired, that's for sure.
And was that anxiety, did you find out the sort of the cause of that? Was it that you just didn't know who Colin was at this point, or was it a fear of just not knowing what to do? You know, what was the underlying factor?
Yeah, that really was a combination of a few things. Retirement and the end of a life. So it just seems, you know, once you retire from sport, that's it, you're done. You know, you don't go back to the track. You're not with the same friends that you were training with perhaps 5 years ago. You're completely isolated for a moment in life. Then also for me, it was, what am I going to do? So that was, you know, another thing that really set my anxieties going. And the self of not being confident in the real world. Mega confident in the world I just came from because I was a champion. It was easy. But when you now have got to go into the cauldron with everybody else, you become a janitor all of a sudden and not the one everybody's looking out for to, you know, to win, to be a winner. So it was really difficult to kind of get that balance right. But I got there in the end, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And then you've had, you know, a significant career work both in media and then with other ventures that you might come on to. But in that transition, in this post period, I mean, if anyone's met you, you're still a physically fit man. You keep yourself well. So what has changed in those lifestyle behaviours, you know, your fitness, your nutrition, your sleep, everything else from now versus when you were an athlete?
Yeah, and I still carry lots of things from my athletic career, I think, into this life. So, you say you've got to look at your training, first of all, and what is going to be destructive on your body and what's going to be constructive, because you want to make things more constructive. So I didn't want to do anything that was really massively impactful on my joints, because I'd spent years battering my joints, as I said. So I had to be really careful in creating things that were easy for me in that sense. So, you know, like yoga, we say, we always know things like Pilates, they're absolutely great for keeping your range of movement, but also for toning you, keeping you, you know, really quite tight, which is what you want to do. Because one of the things I always say to people, you're as young as your spine. So if your spine is really nice and flexible and loose, then you will always feel that way. You'll walk upright, you'll stand, have a good stance. You can move well when you've got a really healthy spine. So I spent a lot of time working on that. Still going to the gym. Yesterday I was throwing medicine balls all around, all over the place. So still keeping really nice and agile in that sense. And once you kind of put that with still decent nutrition, I mean, I'm still happy having just the basics in the morning. So I have a black coffee in the morning and I have a yogurt in the morning. And sometimes I may have a little bit of a fruit smoothie. But then I only literally then have one meal of the day around 5 o'clock. So in the meantime, I do have like a protein shake. Don't worry, I don't go completely starving during the day. So I have a quite a high, relatively high calorie, 500 calorie protein shake that I make, which is just laced with everything. And it always makes me laugh. When people grab my protein shake, they go, whoa, this is heavy. Because it's got everything in there. So you put that into the mix as well. And keep moving, you know, that's what I would say to people. We're not designed to be like we are now, Chris. We're designed to be moving. That's what our body's there. So move as much as you possibly can and get outdoors as much as you can. You know, I think someone, I saw a stat somewhere that the average person spends something like 95% of their life indoors. So when we talk about indoors, we're talking about being in cars, being where we are now. Even going to the gym, it's indoors, you know. You go from work, you go into your car, you go into your house. Or you go from work, you go into your car, you go to a supermarket. You're spending your life indoors. Get outside as much as you can. And that will certainly make the whole world seem so much better. Because, you know, I walk most of the mornings as well, about 6K. Come rain or shine, I'm out there. I'm fortunate I live in a gorgeous part of the world. Wales, which allows me to get out there and walk and enjoy nature in that sense. So, you know, I do as much as I can now that my body is designed to do from history.
And where do you get your information from to know what sort of stuff? Because if you had, let's say, a less than optimal diet when you were an athlete or a younger athlete anyway, and now you're, you know, thinking about what goes in your food, what's going into this smoothie, where's that information come from for all, you know, different types of health behaviours?
Do you know what? I talk a lot to people. I talk to experts, luckily. I'm not, because like I say, because I'm really one of these people happy to chat, you know. If I see something, maybe on the internet in that sense, and I'm slightly unsure about it, I will email somebody who's written an article or somebody who's spouting out about thing and say, is that real? And why is it real? And so for me, again, I have that sense of confidence in doing that and communicating. And also, as I say, marry that with my own experiences and how I feel. Everybody has got to realize their machine, their body is theirs. So the way me and you metabolize sugar to protein to fats are very, very different. And so you've got to put that into the equation as well. And I always say, if you feel great, then you're doing things right.
In Experts in Health, we like to ask the tough questions in the middle of. We try to keep it friendly, relaxed, but we also try to, you know, dig in as much as we can to make this hopefully a really good listen for people. And one thing I wanted to talk about is, you know, you've been quite obviously very, very public. And in being so such a public figure, people can see, you know, in the UK, you're a racial ethnic minority, you're Welsh, but Jamaican, Panamanian descent, and that's quite obvious, but that comes with its particular difficulties that sort of well publicised now, thankfully. But then also, more recently, you shared something that is less visible out there. You shared that you're a gay man. And I just wanted to know what your experience has been like at that intersection of minority sort of communities. How much has that been a part of your conscious life and experiences?
It's really interesting because people externally have a completely different view of that statement that you really made and questioned than I do as an individual person. I think, so first of all, I think if we start on being, when you're in Britain and you're of the descent, the heritage that I have, you're already a minority. So you're already, from the day you're born and you start to walk and you go out into this big wild world, you get to deal with being a minority. And I use the word deal with because, as we know, there's clear prejudice still around the way and you have to deal with it. And some of that is not conscious prejudice that people will really show. You know, it'll be instant language that they really don't think about. But it happens. So you deal from a very, very young age with prejudice. And then when you get older, obviously, and your sexuality comes into it and you start to, you know, have the feelings that you actually have in that sense, then you've kind of been already learned how to handle it because you've been handling it all your life. So it wasn't really difficult for me to deal with circumstances and situations. So you know a way how to bat away things if need be, but also you know how to embrace it because you are who you are. So I think, you know, when you think about health implications, mental health implications, and your own personal implications in that sense, how people perceive you from the outside, I think I was very, very well equipped to be able to deal with that scenarios and situations. So what I think, I feel like I was lucky. Yes, in one way, I was lucky to be able to handle the situation, the environment now. But I'm going to say this, which sounds really odd, but I was saying is that I didn't have to be lucky and I could just live like everybody else wanted to just live, if you know what I mean. So it's good to be a role model on both sides as well, because that allows people to look at you and go, well, I'm like them. I either look like them, I speak like them, blah, 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 blah. And they're successful and they've contributed to society. And I think that's really one of the most important things that we should all focus on. You know, look at ourselves and think about where we go wrong and where we show prejudice ourselves. And then once we can understand why we're showing it, then we can deal with it and then hopefully live in a better world.
It sounds like a very idyllic and a great position to try for everyone to try to be, isn't it? As you said, sadly, we still see in 21st century UK that there's still prejudice around, and with social media, that can really get thrown around with mud on it, and it's really difficult. Have you had any negative feedback, especially since coming out on social media? Have you had those attacks that's really affected you?
Do you know what? No. I've been really fortunate. I mean, really, really, really fortunate. Unless I've got such a protective net of people around me that have been batting it all the way. But no, I haven't. I've been really, really fortunate. And I remember, you know, was there a worry? I think never a worry, because I was confident about myself. So once I was, you know, I remember when I came out in that sense, generally, publicly, all my sponsors and supporters were straight on me, going to me, you know, we got your back, right? You know, you don't have to worry about this. You know this, you know. And I was like, well, yeah, I presume that because you're decent people. So I didn't think you'd be running to the hills, you know. I what you're telling me is what I expected anyway. So it was always interesting to get that. It was nice to get them to say it, though, if you see what I mean. But I wanted them to feel like they shouldn't have to say it because they're decent. So, and if you're a decent human being, what are you justifying being decent for? Just keep being decent and crack on. You don't have to ignore the fact, but in the same, you know, same breath, don't have to keep going, you know, I'm with you. It's all right. I know you're with me. It's good. It's fine. It's fine.
So after that, you know, they said, we've still got your back and you could crack on. I think it's sort of now at this point of filming, that's sort of 6 years on from that particular coming out moment. What are you up to now then? What are people still backing you to do? You know, what's also with the next ventures for Colin as well?
Well, I literally could do anything. I'm blessed, right? But to be honest, you know, I have a huge passion in working with Wings for Life Foundation, which is a charity that is set up originally from Red Bull. And I'm the international sport director for that. And, you know, we raise money specifically for spinal cord injury research. And the reason why I had a huge passion with that is because I realized everybody on this planet could suffer from a spinal cord injury at a moment. Nobody's prepared for it. You know, it doesn't allow you to get ready for things. It just happens. And when you think majority of spinal cord injuries happen either in car accidents or around the home, you can see what I mean when everybody in any particular moment of their day could suffer from one. So I really got this real passion to get the message out about that and to raise funds so that we can find a cure for spinal cord injury. That, for me, is really important. So that's my driving factor at the moment. And then adding to that, as you mentioned, because of my ethnic minority grouping, in that sense, we also suffer big time, especially men, from prostate cancer. So that's the other thing for me that I try to drive that message of, to get guys, A, to talk about their health, and B, is to get tested. When you feel unsure about stuff, don't shy away, get yourself tested. And, you know, there's a big drive, and everybody will look, oh, national health are busy. You look after yourself, get in, get yourself tested when you feel unsure about anything when it comes to your health.
Really good message. And, you know, a lot of that work actually aligns with what we do here at Loughborough, but, you know, other places around the UK in terms of research. And it's so great when public figures get behind the research that people are doing behind the scenes that maybe doesn't have such a presence. So, yeah, really great to see from our side, from a researcher's side of things, a public figure getting on board with something like that.
Yeah, it's really important. I mean, I always think they're the genuine unsung heroes, right? I went to one of the labs in London, and I just think some of the incredible work that they were doing in that spinal cord research situation scenario. And I left with one of the lab technicians, the building. And as I left the building, people literally stopped me to have an autograph and take a selfie. Well, I waved to the lab technician, and he literally just drifted away. And I was like, trust me, you do not want my autograph, because that man who's walking there is going to change somebody's life at some stage. And I'm telling you, that is the person. And people are just looking at me like I'm mad. So, you know, it's really important, like you say, is for people in the public eye to really get these magical, really, I say magical, super mega talented brains to be really celebrated, because that is so, so important for us in humanity.
That would be a big pat on the back, I think, for anyone listening to this who's a researcher out there, because I'm sure sometimes they do feel that they're a little bit hidden away and their work might not be going to nothing. So, yeah, they're definitely not the case. Cool. So just turning for a second to Team GB, what are your hopes at the moment for Team GB?
They're all underway in their preparations. And I think I'd be really fortunate at this moment that I'm, you know, really part of preparing at least one of the athletes, Andrew Posse, to help him with his dream of getting back in the Olympic Games and see what can happen. I think, you know, the support has been so good from the general public, and also I think from the funding aspect of it, that young people really now who are representing Great Britain really feel a sense of pride, and that they're being encouraged to go out there. So I think for me, on prospects, certainly in the world of athletics, because that's what I work in, there are lots of talented athletes who I think are really going to shine in Paris. And, you know, both in male and female athletics in that sense. We've got world champions that I think could become Olympic champions too. So watch this space, yeah.
And where can listeners and viewers sort of find out about your ventures? Where are you most visible so people can follow you and see what you're up to?
Yeah, I think the biggest place for me is always on my Instagram. I run my own Instagram account, so that's always good for people to get hold of. And, you know, if you look on our Wings for Life stuff, you'll see what I'm doing and getting up to and seeing what's going on there. So you will always basically find me on social media doing something mischievous.
Taken you in a fair direction to this point. Just to finish off, if you were to, it's a sort of standard outro, something we ask our guests is, if you were to sell what you do, what you've done to the next generation as a sort of inspiration piece, what might you say?
Do you know, I always dreamed about being successful. Success is really great. And you've got to realise what success means to you. So when I was 19 or 20 or 21, success for me meant I was going to get a really fast car. I was going to get a big house and a, you know, fancy clothes. And that meant I was successful, right? And then I realized as you get older that that's definitely not the case. And when I think of the word success now, I feel that I should have a positive legacy. You should always leave a positive legacy. And that, to me, allows me to truly say I'm successful. When people go, wow, that guy was really decent at what he did, or that guy is telling the right story, or I have empathy in what he's trying to achieve. So for me, leaving a positive legacy and being a decent role model is the most important thing when it comes to success.
Sounds great. And we look forward to seeing what you get up to in these next years of your life. But for now, Colin, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Not at all. And thank you very much for tuning into today's episode. If you've liked what you've heard today, then feel free to like or subscribe to the podcast on the platform of your choice. And you can also check out our other podcast, Experts in Sport, as well. You can find a link to that in the show notes. So that just leaves me to say thanks once again for tuning in. And we look forward to welcoming you back to another health-related podcast in a future episode. Bye-bye for now.